Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, August 29th, 2001. In the fireside room this morning is Norm Day. The session number this morning is DAN 2001-03, and it's titled Repairing and Reentering the Collapsed 1500 Level Main Portal of the Holden Mine. Let's listen in.
For the Forest Service, and I'm the project manager for the cleanup project here going on at Holden. And we've had, this is the third in a series of presentations I've been doing on the mine and the work we're doing to clean the site up under the Superfund Act. And this is just one segment. So you've already missed a few other presentations if you haven't been here that kind of tells the whole story as to how we got to where we are at this point in time. But the segment today that I'm going to talk about is the work we did last summer out here to open up the 1500 level of the mine and repair the collapsed workings and to get into the mine and do some investigative work in the mine. The reason we spent most of the summer out here last year reopening the mine was related to the study that we're doing or that the company is doing on the cleanup project. And we needed to get access to the mine to look at and to evaluate several alternatives on how to treat the mine water. So I don't have time to give you the whole story as to how we got to here, but the time we spent out here last year to open the mine is related to the study that's going on for the mine project. The first few slides that I'm going to go over basically summarizes everything we did last summer, and then I'm going to come back and start hitting each of those points in more detail. URS, they're formerly Dames & Moore, and that's the consulting firm that's working for the company that's responsible for performing the study and the feasibility study of the alternatives at the site. And they contracted with the Atlas Faucet Contracting Company. They provide mine services, contract miners to wherever you happen to need them. And they were contracted to open up and repair the 1500 level of the mine. And that's, for those of you who haven't been up to the 1500 level of the mine, that's what they call around here the third level. And there's a portal there that goes back into the mine. And that's where all the ore came out of the mine from that point and went into the mill. Anyway, the portal repair work began the first week of August and was scheduled to be completed before the end of September. Unfortunately, we had major delays caused by all kinds of problems that were unforeseen at the time, problems in dewatering the portal, and then once we got it dewatered, trying to remove all of the collapsed debris, we ran into boulders so large you can't even pick them up with some of the equipment around here, and we had to drag them out of the mine. And then once we got through the caved portion of the mine, we ran into 4 feet of slime, which is a precipitate, an iron-rich precipitate that precipitated out of the mine water, and log jams made up of railroad ties, and all of this caused a substantial delay in getting the mine reopened. And then once we got through most of those problems, we started filling up our settling pond and had to suspend operations last summer and go into kind of an emergency shutdown of what we were trying to do last year. And we then implemented a monitoring plan to be sure we didn't release any of this iron-rich, iron and aluminum-rich precipitate into Railroad Creek. And we'll get into a lot more detail on that, but I just want to kind of summarize that part of the project. In addition to the mine entry work, URS also contracted with another firm, a fencing contractor out of Wenatchee, to put a chain link fence entirely around the mill structure up there. And if you haven't been up there yet, and been up there in previous years, you'll now find you can't get access directly into the mill building. And it was a real safety hazard. And so for liability reasons, the company put up that chain link fence. In addition to the chain link fence, we also, again, the company was worried about safety issues related to some of the openings in the mine, because there are two other mine openings higher up on the hillside that you could get access into the mine. And people have been doing that over the years here at Holden, even though they weren't supposed to. So we, the company wanted to install some sort of gate, locking gate over those portals. And because of concerns the Forest Service had about potential bat use of these workings, we asked they put in a bat gate. And we've had last summer, then again just last week, we had some of our bat biologists up here looking at the potential for the mine for being used by bats. And then once we...
Is that a good or a bad thing, though?
That depends on how you look. Depends on how you look at it. It's one of the things that we're planning on doing, or at least we're considering in the feasibility study as a part of the remedy, is to put airtight bulkheads on all of the workings. Not only those that we can currently get into, but all of them are up on the hillside. Some of them are caved and you can't enter. But the during the remedy, we would clean out all of those portals and put in airtight bulkheads to restrict airflow into the mine. And that is anticipated that would help improve the water quality. Because right now you have, and again, I'm trying to go back and cover a lot of stuff I've covered before, we have significant metals coming, released into Railroad Creek, coming out of the mine at certain times of the year. And the ore body was what we call massive sulfide ore body, and had a lot of sulfide mineral ore minerals in them, like pyrite, chalcopyrite, and when these are exposed to water and oxygen, the sulfide minerals produce a kind of a sulfuric acid, a dilute sulfuric acid that also will absorb the metals that are there. And this is what's flowing out of the mine into Railroad Creek, and then you have a little different situation on the tailings piles, but you still have acid, what we call acid mine drainage, coming off the tailings piles. So one of the ways that we could control the quality of the water, or at least one way that's being analyzed in the feasibility study, is to restrict airflow into the mine. Now, if bats are using the mine, we have found some evidence that bats are using the mine, not a lot, but some, that two varieties of bats appear to be using some of the upper workings of the mine, particularly the 300 level, which is the highest on the hillside. We have the Townsend Big Ear bat and Myotis, two varieties of bats. I should have brought my bat poster with me, but we have found some limited use. The air that the mine breathes, and there's quite a breeze coming out of the mine. If you were to go up to the 1500 level right now, you could. It's just like air conditioning coming out of mine. The biologists believe that's too cool for the bats to be using the lower levels of the mine for roosting or for rearing their young. They prefer something warmer than that. But they do believe that with all the underground workings and the large stopes that the mine and the temperatures that we have in the mine, they believe the mine has a substantial potential for being used as a hibernaculum by bats, where they hibernate over the winter. Of course, we haven't been in the mine in the winter to observe that, and we're planning on setting up some monitoring equipment that would monitor, use an infrared sensing device that would measure any time that infrared wavelength is broken, it would count, and do some other remote sensing for temperature and humidity over the winter, and then maybe go into one of the levels this winter sometime to see if we can actually see bats. But we have 57 miles of underground workings in the mine and huge stopes. To find bats in there would be, actually see them is going to be pretty remote. Did I answer your question there? So it's significant if there are bats really using the mine for a hibernaculum, then we're going to have some difficult choices to make when we get to deciding whether we want to put airtight bulkheads in or not. Then after we got into the mine, we had a fairly extensive sampling program and an investigation program on the three levels of the mine that we can get into. The 300 and 1100 we could get into before, but now we could also get into the 1500 level. So the purposes for our work last summer, one is to, of course, repair the collapsed 1500 level portal so that we could get into the mine and then do the consulting people call focused investigation of conditions in the underground mine. And by focused, it's looking at certain aspects of how we could do water treatment instead of looking at, there's all kinds of things you can do once you got into the mine, but they wanted to keep it focused. We wanted to evaluate and define the potential methods of in-mine source control measures, as well as potential methods to regulate and manage water discharge. And to kind of explain what we mean there, we have water coming into the mine from several different sources and then flowing out. The lower portions of the mine, which go down about 1,000 feet below the 1500 level, are all flooded and water's coming out. We also have water coming into the mine through various sources that we haven't identified yet, but there are fractures in the mine, and it's just basically snow melt in the spring, and the groundwater through the rest of the year is coming into the mine. And when you get back into the mine, there's water constantly dripping and flowing through the mine at all times of the year. And so that's coming in gradually through fractures in the rock. So one of the things we wanted to see is if we could identify sources of water that we might be able to cap somehow and keep from coming into the mine, or if we could separate clean water from dirty water in the mine. That would reduce the amount of water that needs to be treated. And then we also are planning to think about using the mine as a big storage reservoir when we start our water treatment. Whatever water treatment system we use to treat the water, or to clarify the water, works best if we have a steady flow through that system. And so we would use the mine as a reservoir, or the theory is to use it as a reservoir, and allow the mine to fill up with water in the spring when there's a lot of water, snow melt going through the mine, and then allow that water to be drawn down at a continuous rate throughout the year. Or, and that would require putting not only airtight, but watertight bulkheads in on the 1500 level, allowing the water to fill up. Or the other alternative to that is to pump the water out of the shaft that goes into the lower workings, and then allow that to fill up back up to the 1500 level during the wet season, and then we would siphon the water out of there at a continuous rate. And so those were some of the things we were trying to look at. In addition to those big questions, we wanted to do some additional geologic, geochemical, and hydrogeologic evaluations of the 1500 level and 1500 ventilator tunnels, and then look at the two mine shafts as well. And we're also doing a more detailed structural geology of the 1500 level. We did this on the other two levels as well. Some of these huge stopes go to within 30 feet of the surface, and these are huge rooms. And the concern is that sometime or at some point in time in the future, there is a possibility that the rock, that 30 feet of rock, may eventually collapse, and you'll end up with huge openings into the mine that would just it would allow a lot more water to flow through that mine, and how would we treat it? So the idea behind doing a more detailed structural analysis, that's where we look at all the fractures and faults in the mine, and we map the orientation of those, and we try to then run it through some geotechnical formulas to predict how sound that rock is. So this is a plan map showing some of the, at least the surface part of the work we did last year. Right here is the 1500 level main portal. And if you've been up there, this is that one waste dump up on the third level right here. This is the basketball court where the guys play basketball sometimes. This is the what's left of the mill building. And Holy Village is over in here, and you could, this is the vehicle bridge right here, and you would, if you came up by car or you could walk up this way, you'd go by this area right here. Now it's got some vehicles, dozer, I think, and a dump truck parked here. This was kind of a lagoon that we already there last year. We used that as a sediment pond. And you notice now there's a bunch of orangey gook in the bottom of it that has real neat mud crabs. Anyway, you drive up the road here, and the museum sits right here. And you come on up the rest of the road up here. Currently, the mine drainage out of the 1500 level flows down along the side of the road and then goes right off into Railroad Creek. During the our work last year, the objective was not to worsen the quality of the water that currently flows into Railroad Creek. I mean, we already have contaminated water flowing out of the mine into Railroad Creek, but we didn't want to worsen that. And so we knew that once we started tearing the old collapsed debris out of the mine, and then we would be stirring up a lot of sediment. So we diverted the drainage underneath the road right here and down along this ditch, and then we put it under the road right here in a pipe, and it came down along this ditch and flowed into the pond. The idea there was that everything would settle out before it started flowing out of the pond at this area back into Railroad Creek. We ended up being real lucky in that we never did have a surface discharge from this lagoon. Once the water got into the pond, it just sunk naturally into the alluvium, and we never had a surface discharge. We almost did, and I'll talk about that, but I mean, we were able to run all summer without discharge.
I noticed that the deer enjoy that settling pond.
They also like drinking the water. And they were even drinking it when we were working. There's dirty stuff coming out of there, and they're drinking it. We have done a risk assessment, though. I mean it's real funny. I mean, it would taste metallic to you, you know, if you were to drink it, but it won't hurt you, and it doesn't hurt the wildlife.
Oh, I see.
But we have looked at that. Let's see. You'll see some other features later out here in this waste dump. We did some additional. We put in a kind of a, ended up, when we ran into trouble, we ended up putting an emergency pit right here for some of the slime we encountered. Yeah, that's probably it. Once we completed all the work this summer, or actually ended up being last fall, and once the water was clarified, we then released the water back to this path.
Wouldn't it have been better, Norm, to just continue to at least filter it through that settling pond?
Well, it could have been, but I mean, it is being, and that was something we considered when we were looking at this emergency shutdown plan. I mean, that was a possibility, but this area gets a lot of water in the spring that comes into that area anyway, and it has some pretty contaminated soils in there, and we were just worried with all the ice we might get there that we might cause more problems. And it was definitely something we thought about. And in the end, you'll see we were a part of the emergency shutdown is if we encountered any problems in water quality here over last winter, because Holden Village, some folks from Holden Village came up here about every week during the winter, about every week initially, then I think it went down about every 2 weeks, to observe the water quality, and then they walked back into the mine to observe the first bulkhead that I'll talk about in a little bit. Be sure there was no ice forming in there that could have caused a problem. If we had ended up with dirty water coming out of the mine sometime during the winter, then we would have diverted it back through the settling pond, and we had the company clean a lot of the slime that had built up in that settling pond. It was removed before they were able to leave the place last winter. Okay, this is what the 1500 level looked like it's kind of old and dilapidated now, but basically that's what the portal looked like when the mine started in 1937 and what it looked like when it closed down, and it's basically been untouched over that period of time. And the first thing we had to do to repair, this is all collapsed in here. The portal, the first 90 feet of this opening goes through glacial till before you get into the hard bedrock. And that glacial till, the water in there has rotted out the timbers, and then the heavy weight of that till, it just collapsed. And so it was pretty much collapsed all the way back to bedrock. We were concerned, there is some water that's always flowed out of here, but we were concerned that this collapsed plug in there would dam water up behind it. And we didn't want to start digging into that area and then get to the end and have a massive release of water coming out of there, like taking a cork out of a dam, you know, you can end up with that. So the first objective was to dewater behind there. Well, how do you do that? We looked at several options. One was to bring a large drill rig in and drill a well, essentially, back behind the caved area and then pump the water out. But that would have been pretty expensive, and it would have ended up causing us to disturb several acres of land to get that done. So the company that was selected for the contract came up with a novel idea, and it was when they were out there for the bid walk, they noticed up in this area up here there was a collapsed feature, kind of like a sinkhole. And they kind of looked back into it and they could see that it went back a ways, but that was as much as they could determine. And what they figured was that it was when the glacial debris in this area here back in the mine collapsed, it collapsed and left this hole just like in a sink that you get in karst topography and limestone. Came all the way up to the surface and was expressed in this little collapse feature right in this area above the portal. So what they decided to do was to expand the size of that opening, and you can see they used a lot of the trees around here, and it was just like going back 100 years to the miners putting in this adit, just like they would have done all with hand tools 100 years ago. Through this glacial till to get back to the far end of this collapsed feature, and they figured they were right over the bedrock glacial till contact. So then once they got to the back of this collapsed feature and they got it secure and safe so it wouldn't cave in on them, they sunk a shaft down to access the water and then dewater it. This right here is some of you that saw the earlier presentation about the slusher that they used inside the mine to move ore around, which were huge. This is a smaller one, and this is another ingenious thing. Instead of having to use heavy equipment, they used this slusher to clean all the debris out of here. They'd run it on cables, and it would just, like a scraper, would scrape the dirt out of the opening. Here you are. And this was the opening, they came in, and then that collapse feature kind of came down a little bit. And then right at the lowest point in that collapse feature, then they put in this shaft right here. Again, this was really fun to watch them do this. I mean, there aren't very many miners anymore that can do this kind of work, because it's just simply not done that much anymore. And here we are, finally. They were right on. That shaft came right down, so half of it was on bedrock and half of it was on the glacial till. And this was the little hole that you had to crawl down through. And once we opened that up, the wind just started blowing. It was just like a few of those of you who've been up there, that just started coming out of this little hole here. And these guys had to wear all their heavy clothes to work in there because it was so cold. Anyway, you crawl down through this little hole here and you come out on the back side of the cave feature, and they put in a couple of these pumps and started pumping water out. This is the first view in 30, 40 years looking into that collapsed
feature. How far back in there is that?
That's right at the, at this point in time, I'm right at the contact with the bedrock, right where the glacial till hits the bedrock. And at this point in time, we hadn't gone any further. This was during the time they were still pumping water.
Is this pumping water out of the 1,500-foot level?
That's correct. and it was going into the ditch that was eventually wandering its way into that settling pond or the old lagoon. And you can see these lines up here on the ribs of the mine. That is not the bedrock, bedding in the bedrock. It's actually rings, just like in your bathtub, dirty rings. And the water has been, basically filling this entire tunnel up at various times. And this is a pretty large tunnel, because it's a main haulage tunnel. So it's about 10 feet from the floor up to the back or the roof of the mine here. And you see the dirty water in here. You can see it, that this is about how much we pumped it down so far, maybe 2 or 3 feet. And a lot of these mine timbers in here. And this was like this as far as you can see back into the mine.
So at this point, we're about maybe 75 feet in from the old portal.
Right? You're about 90 feet.
90 feet, yeah.
Here's just the hose delivering the water is being pumped to that ditch, and then it was flowing down into the settling pond here. Once we had lowered the water level enough, we figured it was safe to start dismantling the old adit. That's what we did. We asked the company to save as much as the old timbers here at the portal so they could reconstruct a portal that would look something like the old one. I mean, eventually, when we get around to doing the remedy, we're going to put in a concrete portal and it's going to be more permanent. This is just what we're doing is providing temporary access to the mine. And this photograph, after they removed this debris, they used the backhoe and another little bobcats to excavate back as far as they could. Eventually, we got to a pretty high wall here, and a pretty steep. And at this point in time, then they couldn't excavate a trench anymore. They had to go in underground, but. You can see this is the way it was all the way in through this glacial debris. Here are the timbers, the upright timbers on either rib of the opening, and then you can see these boards here, which they call lagging, that were on the sides of the timbers. And then the big timbers that were across have collapsed. You can see it laying here. And then you can see this big boulder sitting in there. And it was like this all the way. So at this point, and you can see another thing that's going to be a surprise. You can see railroad track right here. And if you've been up there, the railroad track came all the way out and went up to the mill. But at this point in time, there were still railroad tracks here. And here's the little bobcat working. They first started and constructed. They're using steel here instead of timber, which is kind of interesting. Steel sets, and then they, on both the left and right sides or ribs, they did put the wood lagging in, and then they had wood lagging across the top here. Once they got up against that high wall, then the only way they could proceed, because they had to dig the debris out, but they didn't want, if you started digging, everything would come down on you. Plus all those big boulders. So what they did, again, ingenious, but they drove these channel iron, and they even used some of the salvaged a bunch of the old railroad track that was up there at the mill building, and they cut them in about 14 foot lengths, and then they sharpened one end of them. They call it spiling. And they would drive this spiling with an air hammer like the guy's doing over here. Or they also use that as a drill, but it's just a percussion air compressed, runs off compressed air. And they just drive that thing in like a, and they would put them in right next to each other. You see how they're right across the top here and then down here. And that would drive it out ahead of them where they're going to be removing the debris, and that keeps the weight from coming down on them. And then they had to support the working face of this with these breast timbers here, and you see they're wedged in against these steel sets to keep that from coming out at them. So they would drive these ahead, put this in, and then they would excavate And it varied depending on the difficulty of the ground, either 2.5 feet at a time or 5 feet. Most of the time, they were only able to advance 2.5 feet a day.
Wow.
That's one of the reasons it took so long. And you notice these supports here on the side, that wasn't originally planned, but these steel bars, there's so much weight up there, they actually started bending on them.
How long would it take to drive a 14-foot bar into that?
If they didn't get any big boulders, they could do it, and you know it wouldn't take them long to do it with that professional air hammer.
Yeah.
But there was quite a few of them they had to put in.
Yeah.
And here's another example of how they. This is the working face, and this was one particular bad area where they had a lot of large boulders that were just going to roll in on them as they were working. So they had to really. You can see they really got this stuff shored up. And once they get this shored up, then they dig 2.5 feet out and put this upright in, do the same thing on the other side, and then they would put the one across, right. And then get the overhead lagging in. Then they could take these breast boards out and then remove that debris and go another after they put the lagging in. Right. And you can see how some of these things are, these are up in the, you know, these huge boulders. This, could roll right down on their head. This was an extremely dangerous job, but they did it without any accidents. It was just amazing. And here they are again. You can see some of the big boulders here. And this one here, they couldn't even pick up with the bobcat. They had to drag out. And there were several like that they had to drag out. Okay, once we got the repaired that portal all the way back through the glacial till and got to where we had set up the pumps, they left a berm of debris right there. They didn't want to, there was still water backed up behind that point, and they didn't want to release that, so they left this berm. And on the other side of that berm was this, and because I'm standing on the berm taking this picture, and this was just a pile of timbers, and we dewatered it now, but we had this gook or slime in there that was essentially it's an iron rich precipitate that precipitates out of the water when the pH increases to a certain point, the iron drops out of solution. Well, we didn't know how far that went back and what we'd have to do to remove it, so the miners thought, well, we'll walk back and see how far it goes. Because this particular tunnel goes back almost 2,000 feet before it gets to the ore zone. So it doesn't, you know, so it's basically just a haulage tunnel is all it was. And we knew to get back to the area we wanted to look, we're gonna have to go about 2,000 feet. And we were hoping this didn't go the whole way. Anyway, they got just maybe 50, 60 feet away from where I took this picture and stopped and turned around. But this guy right here is about 6'2", 6'3". And he is not standing on the bottom of the of that tunnel. He's actually suspended in this slime right here. He's not touching the bottom.
It's
like being in quicksand.
Yeah, like a quicksand.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy out here ahead of him is actually standing on some of these timbers. And what we discovered was we had about 4 feet, 3.5 to 4 feet of this slime mixed with these timbers. And we discovered after we started looking at the timbers, they weren't just timbers, they were railroad ties. We got maybe halfway into that cave debris, and all of a sudden the railroad tracks stopped. And they had salvaged the railroad tracks when the mine shut down and left the railroad ties.
Oh.
And so once the mine flooded, they kind of came up and were carried up, and you had these little log jams periodically throughout that mine, these timbers. And then you get it mixed in with the slime, and it was just a mess. It was unsafe to go any further, and we weren't sure with the equipment they had, there was no way that they could remove that stuff. So we were kind of stymied. Here's one of the guys, this was their head guy, Frank Fawcett. I mean, now this is what it's like to get slimed at Holden. You can still do that without much difficulty in the mine if you fall down in the wrong spot.
Oh dear.
Where did they take their showers here in the village?
They had the river sauna was dedicated for them. They used that as their change house. That's where they kept all their gear and I mean their mining clothes, and they would take their showers and change there.
Did they live here?
They lived, they had a camp set up down at the Lucerne for most of the summer, and then later in the year when it got pretty cold, in late October, they moved up into one of the chalets when it became available. Anyway, after some consideration, they had to bring in this big piece of equipment here to remove the timbers and the slime at the same time. And this is a big, they call it LHD, load haul dump. This equipment has got a huge two cubic yard bucket in the front. And the thing just, oh, shoot. I did it. Let's see. It will fit through the opening, but you drive it in one way and drive it out, you know, just back it out. So you get a pretty tight net. At the same time they were removing the slime in the railroad ties, they figured this vehicle could get both at the same time, just scoop them up and remove them. They were also then starting to repair, since they no longer needed this portal up here, they started replacing all the soil that had been dug out in through here. So this is the final preparation for the reclamation. We then had to put this pit in up at the top, and the idea was that we would, as the LHD here is removing material, we would dump the slime into this pit. We had a kind of a grizzly set up right here, and they would dump into this grizzly, and the timbers would slide off this way, and the slime would go into the pit this way. And this is inside, and it's kind of hard to see. Matter of fact, it's impossible to see in this picture, but the slime, you can see the level of the slime out here in front of this thing, out in front of the LHD, and this is they're working on removing it.
Is his steering wheel at a 90 degree angle to the bucket? Looks like it.
As I recall, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
But that would be fun learning.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is back in the mine. We're about almost 500 feet back into the mine now, and we were able to remove 400 feet of slime and railroad ties in a day and a half with that big piece of
thing.
And this was the first big air doors, and if some of you are here for my next segment, you'll see some pictures of what that air door looked like during the mining days. But anyway, this was the air door, and then just beyond this was an area right here. You see how it's arched up? This was a fault zone here where the rock had kind of rambled out, and during the mining days, they had some timbers in here. Most of the rock stood just fine, but right in this fault zone, they had timbers, and then they had lagging over it to protect the miners when the ore cars were going in and out. Well, this had, of course, over the years, collapsed, and the miners didn't want to go beyond this point with their equipment until they could timber this up. And so this is where they stopped.
What did you say? It goes back about 2,000 feet.
Yeah, I mean, that's where they stopped with at that point in time.
Oh, I see.
And this picture here is taken right at the place where they stopped, and you can see that they've got a little berm here keeping the slime from continuing to flow out, but it's still about 2.5 to 3 feet deep right here, and just lovely stuff. And here, I just turned around and took a picture of the other direction. It's kind of hard to imagine, but you're looking 500 feet back in the direction. You can still easily see the opening. And you can see these chunks of stuff.
Yeah.
That's chunks of the slime. And it's flowing out the mine. And of course the mine drainage is still coming out of the mine. And it's as they dig into this slime, it breaks up into these pieces, and a lot of it flowed right out of the mine. And then a lot of it flowed out of these chunks. And you can see the chunks kind of just flowing right out the mine portal.
What kind of material is it that would float out?
It's really neat.
Let me,
I'll try to answer that in a question, but here's the bucket right here, and as soon as they dump it, it liquefies.
Oh.
It's a...
Interesting.
It's aluminum and iron and aluminum oxyhydroxide.
Oh.
For any of you that are chemically oriented.
So.
But it's got a lot of water in it. And it has some consistency. So it, when it's not disturbed, it actually kind of looks like a solid. But if you just touch it or somehow disturb it, it liquefies and will flow.
Wow.
And if you were to go out on that settling pond right now, even though it looks like that stuff is pretty dry, I'll bet you that you would sink up to wherever, you know, and some of it would still liquefy. Maybe there's a little rind around it, but I bet you it's still wet inside. Anyway, this was just a mess, as you can see. And here we were stacking all of these railroad ties. You know, we figured we could have as much as 2,000 feet of railroad ties, you know, on a number of these dams. Anyway, we were concerned that they may have used creosote for these railroad ties, and so we had them cut a few of them open. And they are just as fresh. They actually smell like fresh timber inside. They've been submerged in that water and slime and kind of protected. There's just a small little rim, you know, of rock and material right along the outside, and the rest of this was just as good as new.
What was those, you know?
Well, they're still up there.
Yeah, it seems like they could be used for something.
We figured if they cleaned the slime off of them, you know, air, water, pressure, water, maybe they could use it for landscaping around here or
something.
Burn, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the slime was actually
preserved.
Yeah, with the water, keeping them wet like that. Yeah. Anyway, everything came to the screeching halt on October 24th, and the project engineer for URS that was overseeing Atlas's work, and I went down to lunch, and on the way back, things have changed just within about, you know, an hour's time. But all of a sudden we noticed the pond looked different, and it had really all of a sudden the water had apparently all the slime going down into the pond had sealed the bottom of the pond, and the water was no longer able to go into the groundwater, and it started rising. And it was within 3 inches of starting to flow out the intake or the outlet that we had planned all along, but it wasn't going to be clear water, it was going to be this slime. And so we immediately had to go into the emergency shutdown of their operations, and we pulled the LHD out and we put two bulkheads in the water. We over the summer we had observed that as soon as they stop working in the slime or disturbing it, you give it maybe an hour and the water would clarify. The stuff would settle out very quickly. So what the company did was we put in two bulkheads. First bulkhead was this one here. This one, it was the first one we put in, but it's the second one back in the mine. It's about 490 feet back from the portal. And it's 5 feet high, and it's made out of the timbers they had there they were using for work. And it's well anchored into the ribs on both sides. This is right where that air door was. And so we put that in first, and they constructed this whole thing in less than a day. Once we stopped at noon, we stopped them, they started immediately doing this. And they finished it before that evening. And it backed up the water.
Does that allow the water to flow over the top of this barricade?
Yeah, water now flows over the top. But,
yeah.
But we sealed it around the sides and both ribs and underneath. We put some Visqueen back there and then sealed this here. And it immediately started filling up. And
the slime settles behind it.
It settles right out. Got nice clear water flowing out. But now, of course, the water flows over the top of this.
Right, waterfall now.
Yeah. And, of course, to get back into the 1500 level, well, before I tell you that, and then we put this next bulkhead, it's only about 3 feet high, at just inside the mine, just inside the bedrock. It's about 100 feet in from the portal. And then we put these gates in it here, so we could adjust the level, the water level behind this one. So we have the big one here at 5 feet, and this one's 3 feet, and in between we have an additional settling basin about 400 feet, and we got clear water coming out. But now to get back into the mine, we have to take a boat. We have some flat bottom bolts stored inside the mine, and we had to put them in here, and then we sail up the mine to this point, then we got to pick the boats up, put up over this thing, and then pull ourselves. We got a rope in there, and we pull ourselves in. Just like in Venice, all we need is the candlelight.
What and cheese?
Yeah.
Smells probably exactly the same.
Yeah. This is what the lagoon and the settling pond looked like when we shut down. Of course, there's not much flowing in here now because we've shut the water off of those bulkheads, but you can see the contributed to the problem was that we were starting to get, now this is in late October, we're starting to get a lot of freezing temperatures in the morning, and we had ice build up here. You can see where the slime, this is flowing out over the ice right here. And it was, you know, it would be noon or so before the ice would melt. And in addition, we were putting hydrated lime into the water to treat it, to raise the pH. So that would also help drop out some of the metals right in the settling pond, should we ever have a discharge. When we got into all this slime, they were adding a flocculant to it. And we just kind of figured that between filling or getting so much slime in there and sealing off the bottom of the settling pond, the flocculant was not able to work as well in these freezing temperatures. And see, as fast as they were going with that LXD, another day and a half and we could have been done.
Right.
If we could have just gotten a couple more days out of that pond, we would have had it whipped. But,
oh well.
And here's a picture taken after the water stopped flowing into that settling pond. And you notice how quickly it clarifies. And we get nice mud cracks in that slime beneath the water starting to develop. And then this picture was taken right up by the portal, and it was just pretty. That's just the pattern in the slime, in the pattern of the debris, different materials flowing out of the mine, it was just kind of pretty, so I took a picture. But had no other significance other than that. And then, as a part of the emergency shutdown, in addition to the bulkheads, we had the company come in and they had to remove all the slime out of this pond and put it in another emergency pit so that we would have capacity in here over the winter in case, or in spring particularly, was our biggest concern. If something happened in the spring before we could get up here with the snow melt causing a sediment problem in the mine, they would have to revert the water back into here, so we had to make capacity. So we had them get as much of the slime out of here as we could. Well, you could just dig it. So this backhoe is what he's got, some pumps tied off or chained to the bucket, and they would move this thing, lower it down, and just move it all over the bottom of the, like your skimmer in a swimming pool, and suck up all that slime, and then they put it into a truck, into a tank in the truck, and then went over and put it in this pit that we had them make just for this purpose.
And that's
still up there if you want to go look at it. If you know.
The pit's on top. Where is it?
It's on top of Tailings Pile 1.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This was a fun job, though.
Pump slime.
And then finally, once the water clarified and we had them, not only did we have the bulkheads in there, then before we were able to allow them to put the water back into its original course, we had them up there cleaning all that slime out of this ditch with shovels and
brooms and buckets. It kind of reminded me of the oil spill up in Alaska. You know, they're cleaning rocks. They're actually cleaning rocks and getting all the, as much of the slime out of that ditch as they could. And then we said, okay, you could release the water back to them. And then they restored the, they got all this restored up here, and then restored the, and reclaimed it. We planted grass seed and everything up here and put woody debris and stuff to make it, to help keep the sediment down. And then they did the best they could to restore that tunnel. Okay, then that was that part of the work. And then we also had them put in the chain link fence, and this was a heavy duty super duper fence that could withstand the snow and ice loads up here at Holden. And the company wanted a 5-year guarantee that the fence is going to remain intact for at least 5 years. There was a small portion of the fence that they put up along the wall here that they actually put barbed wire instead of chain link fencing. Right, the museum sits right over here. Or no, I'm standing on the little path that people used to use to go from the museum. So the museum sits right over here. But they can see where the barbed wire is. It's either chain link or barbed wire all the way around there, so you can't get in.
No, yeah. I noticed that the person from Intalco was given a presentation early this summer.
Uh-huh.
And showed the different possible remedies and the end uses and all that. And I noticed none of them had anything to do with the mill.
Well, they do, and then we have, see, what they presented to you is still draft. They have presented that to the agencies. We have agreed in principle with the themes of all of the alternatives, but what we're still in the process of negotiating with them as to what the specifics that are going to be in each of the alternatives, some of the detailed descriptions. And in the alternative, as they presented them, they do plan to go through the mill and remove all of the contaminated material. There's still a lot of ore up there, and there's a lot of places with some of the tailings and other things, and their intent is to, at a minimum, remove that out of the mill building. And we've asked them to also consider, in our comments back to them, the possible removal of the entire mill structure, because we know that soils are contaminated beneath the concrete foundation. So we're asking them to consider that as a kind of a part of a sub-alternative.
So the contamination is a prerequisite for their having responsibility for it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In other words, if there isn't, then the Clean Water Act and those things don't come into it.
Yeah, they're actually, they were liable under the Superfund Act. There is,
right.
There's been a release of a hazardous material to the environment, and therefore they're responsible. And liable.
Who is they?
In this case, it's Intalco. They're a successor in interest to Howe Sound Mining Company, which is the company that mines here. And in Talco's, they have contracted with URS. They're their environmental consultants that are doing the environmental work and will also do the design of the feasibility study, the analysis of the alternatives. And that's who was up here. It was Jennifer Dieters from URS. Yesterday, I went through the alternatives briefly as well to the group.
How much money do you think has been spent up to this point? Any idea?
I really don't know. I mean,
nothing compared to what...
You know, they reimbursed the Forest Service $3.1 million already as part of our agreement with them. They're paying for our ongoing oversight costs for both the Forest Service, Ecology, and EPA on a yearly basis, plus all the work that their consultants are doing for them. So, you know, they're probably whacking off at least $1 million a year, and maybe the first year when they did all the environmental work out here, it may have even been more than that. I mean, that's just a guess without really looking at things in detail. But anyway, as a part of the effort to secure the site and make it safer, I mentioned we put bat gates in on the 300 level. And this is the 300 level bat gate, and it's got a couple locking bars here that we can take out, so when we do our investigation work, we can get access, but it keeps the public out. Because there are some real hazards in the mine
that if you're not prepared for or knowledgeable, you can really run into some problems. This is the back gate on the 1100 level. It's a little more difficult to get into the 1100 level. You got to crawl down a hole, and then you got to crawl through this hole here that was in the door to climb into the mine. So we put some these metal bars here with locks on them so people can't get in. The interesting thing here, you notice these white lines. This again is like in the 1500 level. This is a high water mark.
So all the way up to the 300 level?
Pardon?
This is at the 300
this
level?
This is the 1100 level. This is the 300. This is the highest level on in the mine.
Oh.
And this is the next one down.
But
there's a bunch of caved debris in front of the portal. You can crawl over that and get into this point, but it doesn't allow the water to flow out. So, you know, the mine isn't flooded all the way from the 1500 level up to here, but you do in the spring get water back up behind this caved debris. And, you know, there's three and a half feet of water backed up in here in the spring. We had we came in here this spring to do our sampling. We had the water was right up to this point here, so we had to drop right into the water as we came through this hole. We were wearing chest waders, and it was cold even with these insulated chest waders.
Pitch black and spooky too, right?
Yeah. Well, anyway, this is kind of the crew of Atlas Fawcett that was out here last summer, spent so much time. And kind of the future work, we've reached agreement, actually recently is a bad term, as we reached agreement last fall, but on the level of mine entry activities to be conducted this year. Which basically was going to be just sampling. We came in and we did a round of sampling last fall in November, just before Thanksgiving, and then we did two rounds of sampling this spring. The idea was to catch the peak flow or the flush through the mine. We wanted to get water just before it started flowing out, before we started getting that peak flush, and then try to get as close as we could to the peak flush, because that's when we have our worst chemistry or water quality problems, is in that peak flush to the mine. We're going to delay removal of the two bulkheads until later on in the feasibility study, maybe not even until we get to the remedial design. We'd like to see them do it a little bit sooner, but we believe we can get all the information we need to complete the feasibility study. With the bulkheads in there, so we can still get access, but there's some things we can't do because there's parts of the mine we can't get safely into yet, but that will all occur when we can, hopefully, after we've completed the feasibility study, then we know what the remedy is, and we'll go in and do the final design. There's a possibility we may come up with some things that still need to be done, and can only be done if they finish cleaning out all that debris. Because as it is now, once you get to that bulkhead end at 500 feet, you still have to go back about 800 feet more on water, and you've got a lot of slime built up. And that's kind of a fall picture around here.
So are you going to
really all I have on this one? So I'll be happy to entertain any questions until the dinner bell rings.
So there is going to be a continuation then of sampling at periodic times throughout the year and in the fall and then the spring and until you decide, you know, what you're going to do, what plan you're going to take.
We haven't agreed on when the next round of sampling is going to be. I mean, all we had agreed to was last fall sampling and then the spring sampling. Matter of fact, we're still in the process of analyzing all the data we took. We may feel that we've got all the information we need from those three rounds of sampling, and then we may not. And so we haven't come to agreement yet with the company as to what's going to be done this fall or next spring.
Are you working with some sort of deadline that they have to have this work?
No. What it looks like now, we'll probably... looking at another 2 years before we have a final feasibility study, and then the company's involvement kind of stops because they prepare the document up to the final feasibility study, and then the agencies will take that document and prepare what's called a proposed plan, which is the remedy that the agencies have selected. The company doesn't get to select the remedy, the agencies do. That then goes out formally for public comment. And we'll have several public hearings around, probably Wenatchee and maybe Chelan, maybe Seattle, maybe even some kind of public meeting right here in Holden Village, where we'll have a court stenographer come in and record the comments, and then we agencies will prepare a response to those comments and then produce a final, we'll produce a record of decision, which will be the remedy. And in addition to the public commenting on that, so does the company. So, even though we will take it from there, the company will be commenting on it. We will certainly consider their comments, because one of the things we do once we make the final decision, and then we're going to have to negotiate another agreement with the company to do the cleanup. So,
who will eventually end up owning what's done, or who will administer it?
Well, some of those things will be worked out in the final consent decree, but the current land ownership is not going to change. Most of the land here is National Forest System lands. There's 10 acres of private land in the area of the mill building, and that area that belongs to Holden Village and the Lutheran Bible Institute. And then there's a number of patented mining claims up on the hillside where the ore body is that again belongs to Holden Village and the Lutheran Bible Institute. So the ownership of those lands will not change. We may put some covenances on, or deed restrictions on, the private land to prevent it from ever being mined or something like that. We've also withdrawn from mineral entry the National Forest System lands around the mine site to prevent some mining company from coming in and locating mining claims, or from someone else coming in and just trying to make things rough for us by locating mining claims and then trying to get us to buy them out or something. So the area's been, which has happened before. So it's anyway, the area's been withdrawn from mineral entry now, so that can't happen.
Do I understand that the water that comes out of the mine now goes straight into the creek?
That's correct. And it has since it first started coming out of the mine in the late 60s.
Could you venture a wild guess at when do you think the remedy would be completed?
Well, let's say it takes 2 years to get to the final feasibility study, and that's a stretch. I mean, that's optimistic that we'll do that and get a final feasibility study in 2 years. It'll probably take another year to get through the ROD, the proposed plan, the record of decision, and then also to negotiate a consent decree. And then, so you're looking at a minimum of 3 years from now, at a minimum. It's probably going to be closer to four, I bet, the way things go. And then, depending on what remedy is selected, it could take from 2 to 3 years to construct the remedy.
So will you see it, or will you be prepared?
My plan is to stick it out to the end. Even though I can retire in a couple of years, my plan is to stick it out to the end.
So we're talking maybe 6-7 years.
Yeah, and then there'll be a period of intense monitoring for about 5 years after that, where we'll be out here all the time monitoring conditions to be sure that the remedy is working.
From what you know, I haven't attended the previous session, but the original mining company bears the major, and its successor bears the major liability for all this. Under what legal theory is Holden Village, be removed from any legal?
Well, actually, they're not. They are liable as well. They're likely to be a non-monetary contribution. Holden Village. We're not looking at Holden Village or the Lutheran Bible Institute
because they didn't
monetary contributions to the cleanup.
Do you have a mining background yourself?
I'm a mining geologist.
Oh, you are? And you work for the Forest Service.
Oh, nice.
Well, this has been a really excellent presentation.
Do you have pictures of the rooms that you've talked about in later presentations?
Yeah. In the presentation I'm doing, the next one, which is Friday, I think.
Okay.
Yes,
because the The river was channelized by the mine company. Is there any plans to de-channelize it and bring it back to its natural way it was?
No, not totally, although we may do some rerouting and...
Because what I've seen from other streams is sometimes that has more to do with a decrease of trout than...
Yeah, well, the reason the fisheries would decline is because we have iron-rich...
Right, I understand that, okay. But the channelization of bringing the river down like a giant sluiceway down where it used to meander all over into several different channels is more conducive
alternative is selected that leaves the tailings in place. So actually, even if we do the consolidated alternative, we still end up with a big pile of tailings right here in the valley. And the stream used to flow right down through the middle of tailings pile one and kind of through a portion of tailings pile two and three. And of course, they had to move that stream over to put the tailings piles in place. So unless we were to remove the tailings piles totally from the valley, it's really not going to be possible to return it to...
Some of the other streams that go into Lake Chelan were channelized not by man, but actually by some horrific flooding that happened, and have taken this type of backhoe that walks like a crab, and mm-hmm. you've seen that, and they move boulders and logs to take that channel out, bring it back to more friendly to the fish.
We already
want to do that to this creek, but in doing that, they thought it would bring up all the heavy metals and stuff, so they didn't dare. They couldn't get up.
Well, they did a little bit of that 10 years ago when we put the gravels up in here, because the iron solution coming out of the tailings have actually solidified part of the bed of River Creek, just like concrete. And you can see that when you walk down along there. But we ripped that up when we did the work here 10 years ago on the tailings piles. And within a couple of years ago, within a couple of years after we did that, it started re-cementing again.
Yeah.
So the only way we can prevent that is to cut off the source of the iron water, which almost any of the alternatives is going to call for collecting that heavy iron, collecting that as they come out of the tailings and then running it off some kind of treatment system before it has a chance to flow into River Creek. As a part of all of the alternatives, we are going to rehabilitate River Creek. In other words, we'll rip up wherever we have that iron or ferric creek, that'll be ripped up and probably removed out of the creek, and then we'll put in, I'm not sure if we'll go with woody debris, but we'll probably put in boulders and create some pools and stuff like that, do some rehabilitation on the channel. There is a possibility that the River Creek might be relocated in a couple places as we do the remedy. One, right here where it makes that real steep bend right into the tailings pile two, we may kind of run it through here and cut that off. And that'll give us some additional room to put a wetlands in there to help treat the water. Yeah?
You talked about water treatment. On a chemical level, are there any specifics out there as far as the cooling the... But there were mostly cations in there, right?
The major metals of concern, I mean, there are copper, zinc, and cadmium in the mine discharge water. And there's some in the seeps coming out of the tailings, but it's not to the same level. The tailings are mostly real high in iron. Of course, there's no standards on iron, but the iron is what's...
The
pH raises, becomes neutral, or more neutral, although the iron is precipitated out, and that's what, you know, is binding up the gravels.
So the treatment approach would be to basically try to precipitate all those things out in a controlled fashion before dumping the water, and then have you have it in a precipitate form.
So the water coming out of the treatment system meets water quality standards. Now the thing we don't know yet, there's many things we don't know yet, but we're not sure about what kind of treatment system. That's why I see that's why I say treatment system, because I don't know if we're going to have a treatment plant, which we, you know, a regular chemical treatment plant, or we'll just have a series of these wetlands. You know, we have both an aerobic and anaerobic conditions in these ponds, and then remove the metals to a point where they meet more farm standards. The agencies don't believe, at this point in time, we haven't been convinced that just a wetlands treatment system will get the levels we're looking for. The company says, they will.
But that's so much cheaper.
But that's something that's cheaper, exactly. But it's something that'll be analyzed in feasibility study.
Speaking of cheaper or more expensive, what's the likelihood that the federal government's going to end up paying for most of this?
Well, so far we haven't paid for any of it, and we got a significant amount of our money back from what we spent 10 years ago.
That doesn't answer my question.
The company is paying for everything up to the feasibility study, completion of that. Once that's completed, then we have selected a remedy, we negotiate another consent decree with the company to actually do the remedy. Mm-hmm. And when we negotiated the consent decree with them on their payment, or reimbursing the Forest Service for our past costs, when they paid us the $3.1 million, they agreed in that consent decree to release the Forest Service from any further liability at the site. And they also agreed in principle to do the remedy that's selected. Now we still have to negotiate another agreement with them, but they've already said that they're going to do it. Now, if the agencies were to pick the most expensive remedy and the company said, hey, we think that's ridiculous and we're not going to do it, well, then we would be in court with them. And somewhere down the line, a court would then decide if what the agencies wanted was reasonable, reasonably prudent, and or decide that maybe what the company is saying is more reasonable. At some point, a judge would be involved in the decision. And
I guess the question I'm partially raising is, what if the company simply can't pay for it?
Well, the company can. This particular company is...
You do not think it will be so expensive that the company literally couldn't do it?
They may feel that it's more expensive than they want to spend, but the company in Talco is, and I don't know the exact ownership portions, but they're partially owned by Alcoa Aluminum and a French company called Pechenet, and I don't totally know how that ownership is worked out, who has the greatest percentage of liability there, or financial responsibility. But the company is also trying to use some of the insurance policies that Howell Sound had when they were in existence to pay for this. Mm-hmm. And there's currently litigation going on between Intalco and the insurance companies.
How does the Superfund fit into this? And tell us again.
Well, the work, this whole effort is being done under the authority of the Superfund Act.
I see.
But this is not a Superfund site.
Oh, okay.
It's not a Love Canal. But it does score high enough to be placed on the National Priorities List, which would make it a Superfund site, but the state nor the Forest Service or EPA really want the site to be. That carries some negative baggage that people don't like. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Should have had a larger audience.
Governmental way to take.
Anyway, the next segment of this, if you're here Friday, will be a lot of underground mine pictures when we were underground, and then some comparison to pictures of what the mine was like when it operated.
Thank you.
Well, we got some muckers you can wear.
Oh, no, thanks.
Yeah, I
want to
see Glenn in there.
I'll get that.
Unfortunately, they've got those access doors locked.
I don't want to be mucking too much.
Coming, Ricky?
So what are you making me for lunch?